The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students to the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by my two co-hosts today, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. Week one of the 2024-2025 college football season has come and gone, guys. Upsets happened. Nathan, Virginia Tech went down. Your pick to win the ACC. The country was introduced to a few new faces like Ryan Williams and Cam Coleman, a couple other guys. And then Alabama and Auburn did win. That's any surprise there, I don't think, playing Western Kentucky and Alabama A&M. But let's start off with the Alabama Crimson Tide and their 63-0 win over Western Kentucky, Nathan. What was the good of the win there with new faces on Alabama and a new head coach on the sideline?
Well, I think there was a lot of worry about how Alabama was going to come out to start the season. You go back to last year and how they opened up, going kind of flat, made a lot of mistakes early on. I think back to the Middle Tennessee game last year. And, I mean, the first touchdown came off a bad snap from Seth McLaughlin. Joe Miller just had to improvise to take it in for a touchdown. The offensive line struggled in that game as well. They come out in this game, other than that first offensive possession, which didn't look good. It looked like I'm not sure what happened with the fumble that Jalen had. But the defense looked really good. That second drive, Keon Sab getting his first pick of the game. And then Alabama capitalizing on positive field position and getting it in the end zone, Jalen taking that in. And then the defense just bending and not breaking in certain scenarios when Western Kentucky was able to move the football down into Alabama's territory. Keon Sab picked up another interception and almost took it to the house. Very early on, you could recognize that the defense was really getting after it. What Kane Womack has done this offseason has been nothing short of incredible. I like the defensive scheme he has put in, really utilizes the defensive line well, which is really complementary to what is in the secondary right now, which is still a lot of inexperience, a lot of youth. But that wasn't really the issue. I mean, I could get on the list of the number of key players on defense that just kept making plays. I mean, when Darius Robinson was in the backfield so many different times, he will take a very good edge rusher. Quay Rousseau, we got to see him play for the first true time, and he looked really, really good. LT Overton, the transfer from Texas A&M, was able to get after it on the defensive line. And then you just talk about the guys you already knew you had. Jahad Campbell, Deontay Lawson flying around the field, being able to make tackles. I mean, they were just headhunters out there. I was really impressed with Zamian Brown. They targeted him a lot in this game, him being basically a true freshman cornerback. You expect him to make mistakes, but really he held his own. Keon Sab was able to help him multiple different times, and was able to get picks. Another guy, Red Morgan, he had a pretty good game as well. Overall, I felt like the defense was just locked in from the jump, and they did not give up any points. So having a shutout in the first game of the DeBoer era says a lot about what Kane Womack has done with this defense in the offseason. Looking more towards the offense and what Joe Milrow was able to do. I mean, he only threw the ball, what, 9 times and completed on
7 of 9. Those.
Yeah, and passed for 200 yards, 3 touchdown passes. So we didn't really get to see much of the offense. I mean, the time of possession, other than the last drive of the game, was like 27 minutes for Western Kentucky to Alabama's 18, and that coming off like a 10-minute drive in the fourth quarter. So Alabama's offense, really, we didn't see much out of it, but I mean, they took advantage of what the defense was able to give them with the 2 turnovers in Western Kentucky territory, and then capitalizing on big plays, had a huge run from Justice Haynes. He took it to the house, I believe, off the second play off of getting a fourth down stop, and inside Alabama's 20. So that was huge. And then Jam Miller having a rushing touchdown, saw a lot from them. So I think it says a lot about the running back room and what we saw from them, that it's going to be fine. I mean, losing Jason McCollum to the draft, I thought there was a little bit of worry with that. But Justice Haynes and Jam Miller are 2 very, very good backs, and they capitalized on what the offensive line was able to do. And I thought that they did a great job with their run blocking. With Caden Proctor going down in pregame, having a shoulder / arm injury, we didn't see him at all. So we saw Elijah Pritchett move to his position. And I felt like that first possession, really, he struggled. having to move around from guard to tackle and just being thrown around the offensive line, you can't really expect it to just go seamless. And I felt like that was kind of that first possession where he didn't really pass set right on the edge, and that allowed his guy to get to Jalen Milroe and cause a fumble. But the rest of the game, I thought he did perfectly fine. The offensive line did really, really a great job in pass protection when Jalen Milroe did pass. And then, of course, I think everyone wants to talk about what Ryan Williams was able to do with his two receptions for 139 yards and two touchdowns. Dude's 17 years old, making plays out there. I think he has an argument to be one of the best freshmen in the country. Him and Jeremiah Smith, Cam Coleman, you can get it on the list. This freshman class is very, very talented across the board. And I think we'll be looking back on it at the end of the season. And anyway, this is one of the best wide receiver classes we've had in a long time. But Alabama really didn't look like they missed a beat. I mean, Alabama, if people have said it time and time again, Alabama is still the standard. Kalen DeBoer coached pretty much like Nick Saban would have coached this game. Didn't run out the score at the end, even though they had the opportunity to. So we still have not seen 70 points from Alabama. I haven't seen 70 points from Alabama in my lifetime. I don't know if they've ever done that before. And one last thing to add here, TJ Finley, who decided he wanted to talk trash leading up to the game, saying that every single time he's played Alabama, he's had over 150 yards passing. Not like that's a big deal or whatnot. Western Kentucky as a team did not eclipse 150 yards total. So within that comes with TJ Finley throwing two interceptions and getting benched in the second quarter. So I hope he enjoys his rest of the day at Western Kentucky. He's on his fourth team and he still can't get Alabama out of his mind. Alabama takes care of business and they'll play at USF next week. And that should be an interesting game. Speaking of that last season, that didn't really go according to plan, but I think it will probably be different results this coming season.
Nathan, Keon Sabb was named SEC Defensive Player of the Week with his two interceptions. And then you had Ryan Williams named SEC Co-Freshman of the Week alongside Nico at Tennessee. And Alabama lost Caleb Downs at safety. Keon Sabb comes in to replace him. And they lose Isaiah Bond at receiver to Texas. And Ryan Williams comes in to replace Bond. Did Bama upgrade in those two departments there?
Look, I mean, in the moment, you want to say, yeah, of course they upgraded. But it's been 1 week. I mean, it's going to be a long season. And we all know the type of caliber players that Caleb Downs and Isaiah Bond were. But I look at the talent that Keon Sabb offers. And then I'll get Ryan Williams. I mean, he looks like one of the best freshmen in the country. So, I mean, two young guys, but as far as taking advantage of the opportunities they were given, I mean, they've done a fantastic job with that thus far. And I'm sure that we'll continue to see him throughout the season. I mean, Ryan Williams could end up being a wide receiver one for Alabama at the end of the season. Jalen Milroe looks like he really favors him when it comes to passing. I know it was very limited with what Alabama was able to do with it basically raining for hours before the game, which is why we saw so much of the running game. But I mean, Kendrick Law having that touchdown, I really thought Jeremy Bernard was going to get more targets, and that just didn't end up being the case. And that just goes more back towards what Alabama had to do because of the weather. But I think you look at that from a different perspective saying, well, if Alabama is able to conform to play this type of game based on the weather, then I think they'll be fine in pretty much any scenario. Because I trust Jalen Milroe to be able to throw the ball in just clear weather. And I thought he made some pretty good passes. His reads looked a little bit better going through. I think it was Ryan Williams' second touchdown. He was able to go through three different progressions. And finally, on the third, he hit Ryan Williams in the middle of the field. I thought he made a really good pass. So I know it's a limited sample size from what we saw from Jalen Milroe, but I felt like he gave us a lot to look forward to. And as far as like receivers go, we compare it to last year, Jermaine Burton really being wide receiver one. I felt like that there's more depth there than anything else. And I feel like that's something Alabama really struggled with last year, with Isaiah Bond really not getting started till the end of the season. And then Kendrick Law really not being utilized to hit the best of our ability. So I think it'll be really different this season from what we see, especially with Kalen DeBoer and Jamarcus Russell kind of overseeing the operation. Nick Sheeran.
Jamarcus Shepherd.
Sorry. Yeah. So, you see, there's so many players in this head that you just come up with names at the end of the day. But yeah, Nick Sheeran's done a great job with Jalen Milroe this offseason. I think his passing form a little bit better. It felt like he was getting the ball a little bit quicker than he was last year. And on the deep passes, he still looked very accurate. So saw a lot of great things. But you know, it is only 1 week and there is an entire season. So you got to kind of look at the bigger picture and you can't have an overreaction to one game. I think that we'll keep repeating that as we go down through some of these other games that we'll talk about. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm sure there's a lot of other people excited. But I mean, Kalen DeBoer picking up the first win and it's a shutout. So that says a lot.
Gray, any outsized perspective on what Alabama did this weekend to Western Kentucky?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think there was any concerns of, you know, was Alabama going to Alabama this year or this week? But there were questions going into what we would see, especially in week one from the a team where you got your new coaching staff for the first time in almost two decades and all these new transfers and new additions and a new system and all that. So obviously there were questions and yes, it was Western Kentucky, yada, yada, yada. We're going to say that about every single game we talk about. And yes, it was this. Yes, it was that. It's the first time playing against somebody else. I think that's the biggest thing. And look, Alabama just came out and dominated. And just like Nathan said, it felt like Nick Saban coached this game. I know the weather really impacted the game plan, it sounds like, but what we were able to see from Alabama's running back room, you know, the consistency from Jalen Milroe, the star-studded freshman talent and Ryan Williams and those guys, just like y'all mentioned, being able to replace a guy like Caleb Downs with a guy like Keon Sabb, who, you know, I don't want to say it's an upgrade just yet, but it's sure looking like that, you know, after the first week of college football. It's impressive. Alabama is still going to be Alabama, and anybody who has doubts and says it's not is full of themselves.
So let's flip over to Auburn, Gray, and talk about what happened there with Alabama A&M and their 73-3 win over that team. In the second half, they came over the PA because you were at the game, Gray, and you said they announced they were shortening the quarters, similar to what Arkansas did against Arkansas Pine Bluff. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of them shortening the quarters here rather than padding the stats?
I would say there's two different sides to this. Obviously, there's a fan side of that I'm in the stadium. I'm exhausted because we have scored so many points. I really go home. I kind of want to get home to watch, you know, the end of that Notre Dame Texas A&M game, and it's going to be kind of close. So in that sense, yeah, but I mean, 10 minutes were taken off of this game. First of all, I didn't even know you could do that. Apparently this is a new rule, you know, with FCS opponents, but it was wild. It was really different when they came on. Actually, I said, you know, sitting there with my dad watching the game in the stadium, he just noticed that there was only 10 minutes on the clock before they came over. The PA announcer was like, why is there only 10 minutes? It should be 15. And then the head ref came over and said that, or came on the PA and said that they were going to do 10 minutes, that the refs in both programs have agreed to it, 10 minute quarters for the third and fourth. It was a little weird, but it didn't stop Auburn from scoring even more.
So kind of like what Nathan did with Alabama, Gray, what are the good of Auburn's win against Alabama A&M?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good. And again, let me preface this. This is Alabama A&M. This is an HBCU school who I think playing your in-state schools for the bye games, the where you pay them $1.7 to $2 million, I think it's important. You know, you're up in the prestige in your state. I think that's important. You know, Auburn's, you know, played Samford and Alabama State and South Alabama and Alabama A&M many, many times. This was Alabama A&M, and there shouldn't be an overreaction. But all I wanted to see from Auburn coming into this game was a clean game. And that's exactly what they were able to put out there. No turnovers, only one offensive penalty, and only three defensive penalties. That's exactly what I wanted to see from Auburn. I wanted to see what Hugh Freeze would throw out offensively with new offensive coordinator Derek Nix, and obviously the new toys that he has at that wide receiver room, which I'll talk about in a second. I wanted to see what they would throw out there, because Auburn's in a weird situation where their schedule really doesn't pick up until week four and five when you get into SEC play. I know you get Cal this week. I'm not impressed with Cal. I think Auburn will cover Cal pretty easily. And then New Mexico. And then Arkansas is your first SEC game. So, and Arkansas blew out Arkansas Pine Bluff. Not impressed with Arkansas at all. And then you get Oklahoma at home. Then you're right in the swing of things. Then it's Georgia, then Missouri, then it's bang, bang, bang. So I was interested to see what we would see from Auburn schematically, offensively. And I thought we would see a lot more of just, let's just run it. Let's get this game through. Let's get it out of here without any injuries, that sort of thing. Oh, no. Mm-mm. No. Auburn had only attempted 18 rushes. Jarquez Hunter only had 4 carries in this game. If Gus Malzahn was the head coach of Auburn, he would have had 55 carries. And Auburn would have won 24-12, something like that. No, Hugh Freeze slung it around, showed the recruits that were in the stands that, no, we're here to sling it around. We're here to use these wide receivers that we recruited this past year and in the transfer portal. Talking about the wide receivers before I talk about Thorne and other things that I like, talking about the wide receivers, I'll give you a stat. Last year, the entirety of last season, every single game, Auburn's receiving core combined for 7 total touchdowns. Auburn's receiving core in Saturday's game combined for 6. It's just that different. And every one of those touchdowns were to a new receiver. You're the only 2 guys who, you know, recorded a catch that were on this team last year were Caleb Burton and Rivaldo Fairweather. And they were not really in the game plan that much. They were getting it to the new guys. They were getting them out in space. They were letting them run deep routes. They were letting them run stop and goes. And just, it just looked like we were playing college football 25, just slinging it around everywhere for a moment there, especially in that first quarter. Obviously super impressed with the freshmen, Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson, Cam Coleman, Bryce Kane. Those guys are going to be outstanding for years to come. I think a lot of people are so excited about Cam or so excited about Perry that they forget that Malcolm Simmons was a top 20 wide receiver in this past year's cycle and is going to be the difference maker at the wide receiver spot. Because top corners and top safeties are going to flood to Cam Coleman, especially in SEC play. And they're going to flood to Perry Thompson, especially when you get in the red zone. Those guys are 6'4", 6'5". They're huge red zone threats. A guy like Malcolm Simmons and a guy like Keandre Lambert-Smith from Penn State are going to excel in this offense because of guys like Perry Thompson, guys like Cam Coleman, even guys like Rivaldo Fairweather coming back. The weapons that Peyton Thorne has on this offense is astonishing. And it's just going to get better. And talking about Peyton Thorne, there were some mistakes from Thorne. I know he, you know, threw for 322 yards, 4 touchdowns, also had 49 rushing yards and a touchdown. So stat wise, it looks like a fantastic game. There were some missed throws. There were some mistakes that you saw Hugh Freeze really attack him on the sideline for. Hugh Freeze expects Peyton Thorne to make those plays. He expects him to run the RPO. You know, like Hugh Freeze knows he can run the RPO. So I think he'll be fine. I think the more games he plays, the better he gets, honestly. And the more weapons he has, it definitely is helping him out for sure. Was really impressed with the offensive line play. There were some questions going in about who's going to be the left tackle. Is it transfer Percy Lewis or is it a guy like Tyler Johnson or your last year starter, Dylan Wade? They moved Wade into interior guard and started Tyler Johnson. But both guys got snaps and both guys look good. I think over the next 3 weeks or the next 2 weeks against Cal and New Mexico, you need to be playing around with that. When you start getting into SEC play, and especially when you have Oklahoma come to town with that defense, you got to have that figured out. You got to have that. You got to know what we're doing. And then on the defensive side of the ball, look, I'm impressed. I was very impressed with what DJ Durkin and Charles Kelly were able to do. Again, it's Alabama State. That team wasn't going to put the ball in the end zone. But just like I said, there were very little mistakes. There were very little missed tackles and miscues that we would see from Auburn teams in the past, especially last year. A leader of that defense is definitely Jalen McLeod. That dude has a chance to be all SEC first team edge rusher. And even an All-American, he had two tackles for loss, a sack, and was just unblockable. And only, I think he only played like 19 snaps according to Pro Football Focus. He was unstoppable. And then getting a lot of young guys, a lot of rotation on that defensive line. We saw Malik Blockton make some really good plays. Morris Williams, TJ Lindsey, Keldrick Falk's going to be there. We know what he can do. And then guys like Eugene Asante and Jaron Thompson, the Texas safety transfer, making plays as well. It's exciting. It's exciting. It was a clean game. It was an injury-free game for Auburn. And it was a game where you can now go to the film room and figure it out. I think it also gave a lot of confidence to especially these young guys. Just giving an example here, this is my last point. The team run out before the game, you could see, I tried to lock my eyes on a few of the freshmen, Morris Williams, Perry Thompson, Malcolm Simmons, Cam Coleman, those guys, I tried to lock my eye on them and just see their body language. And I just see Malcolm Simmons running in circles. And I see Cam Coleman like kind of vibrating and shaking. And you could tell those guys were so hyped up and so nervous for that opportunity and excited. It's good to get them settled down, calm down. I'm glad the schedule worked out the way it does. We've got a few games to do that before you get into some tough play like Oklahoma, Georgia, Missouri, and those guys.
Talking about that schedule, Gray, I know against Alabama A&M, we've harped on this a couple times, but if Auburn can play that well in the media of the SEC play, is a 9-win season the expectation for them?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I predicted Auburn to go 8-4 this past year. I think 8-4 is the floor for this team. You think Auburn and you think they're going to be okay, but they're going to be really young and they're going to have some pieces where they're going to have to rely on freshmen. And you're like 7-5. All right, but then you look at the schedule and you're like, oh, we traded LSU for Vandy and we traded Ole Miss for Kentucky. And we traded Mississippi State for Missouri. Now, I'd say one of those is a harder game. And then you don't have to go all the way across the country to play Cal at 4 a.m. You have them come here. And then you add Oklahoma instead of another out of division game. The schedule works out in Auburn's favor to go 8-4 or 9-3. And it's hard for a lot of people to come up with the five losses if they tell me 7-5. If you come up with five losses, that means you're going to have Auburn losing at least two home games. And Auburn has eight home games this year. We know what Jordan Hare can be. We know what kind of voodoo that magic place has, no matter who's coming in. I think the only two automatic losses I have on Auburn's schedule right now are at Georgia and at Alabama. Other than that, there's four toss-up games: the Oklahoma game at home, the Missouri game on the road, the Kentucky game on the road, and the Texas A&M game at home. I think those are the four toss-up games. I could be pushed or pulled either way in those four toss-up games. Yeah, I really could. And then there's games where you just got to step up and execute, like the Vanderbilt game, where goodness gracious, like the Cal game, like the Arkansas game, and games like that. And then you're 8-4. You win two of those toss-up games, you're 8-4. You win three of those toss-up games, which you very well could, there's your 9-3 season. Then you're talking about, oh my gosh, Auburn had the number 7 ranked recruiting class after going 6-7 and getting embarrassed by Maryland and New Mexico State to, oh, now they're 9-3. Now some proof of concept is on the field. What happens now?
So Nathan, what's your outsider perspective on what Auburn did this weekend and the future of the team?
Yeah, I was impressed with Peyton Thorne's decision making. I think that's a big thing I've harped on all offseason, was with him needing to be able to be comfortable inside the pocket. And then when things don't go to plan, when things collapse inside the pocket, can you improvise? Can you make decisions in that split second and be able to convert in unnecessary downs? I think a lot of time last year, we saw him struggle in some of those scenarios. And I mean, that's the difference between winning or losing a football game. So I think Peyton Thorne did a great job with that. Guaranteed. I know we keep repeating it. It's Alabama A&M. We really won't know until Auburn plays a real pass rush defense. But I saw a lot of good things from Peyton Thorne. I liked what I saw from Hank Brown with the short sample size that was given. But I thought he did a great job of converting on a few throws, especially throwing when you're up 66-3. I thought that was a little surprising, but you know, Hugh Freeze will be Hugh Freeze. He just has that Ole Miss in him. Just like Lane Kiffin. So you have that. And then as far as like receiving goes, being able to spread the ball and get a number of people different touches, and really just having to go through those reps in these type of games is very important, especially when you get into the meat of the season. You already really touched on that, Gray. One thing I'd like to see more of is maybe running the ball a little bit more, getting Jarquez and Jeremiah Cobb some more reps. But I mean, for what they had, they did a really good job. I thought the offensive line looked really good. Defense, we already knew what Auburn had there, but I mean, they just really solidified what they were. And I thought the secondary really shined in that. And being able to force two fumbles, I think that's big when you talk about getting turnovers, because turnovers were really the difference in a game. You had that positive turnover ratio, you really expect to win at the end of the day. So seeing that from the defense, really aggressive, a lot of hustle, a lot of tenacity from those guys. And you know, Auburn will have a little bit of a bigger challenge going, having Cal at home. I would expect them to win that game, given that Cal looked really, really flat against UC Davis. I mean, that was a really poor game for him. So I would expect Auburn to take care of business. And we talk about Auburn's record and what it can be. And we really won't know. I mean, we really just keep repeating. We can keep predicting and looking at schedules, but it won't really matter until about week three, when you will recognize teams' identities, what they're able to do, what kind of offense they have, whether they have a air raid offense, or they're a run first team, or they like to spread it out, or quick pass game, stuff like that. I think that's big. But from what I saw from Auburn this week, it was really, really good. I thought Hugh Freeze did a great job with the personnel that was in the game. But I mean, a lot to look forward to if you're an Auburn fan.
Yeah, I do want to point out, Nathan, just like you mentioned, that long pass from Hank Brown to Sam Jackson, when we were up 66-3. So talking about this Cal game, Cal seems to have a lot of confidence coming into Jordan-Hare Stadium and coming into Auburn. Let me remind Cal that a much worse Auburn team went and beat them in Berkeley, California last year, and Hugh Freeze's second game in his tenure at Auburn at 4 o'clock in the morning, because we decided to play a Pac-12 after dark game there. But the only reason Cal was close in that game was their stud quarterback that they put in the game halfway through the game last year, by the name of Sam Jackson V, who's now the wide receiver that just caught Hank Brown's touchdown pass when Auburn was up 66-3. He's actually really good friends with Peyton Thorne. He's like middle school friends with Peyton Thorne in high school. Cal seems to have a lot of confidence, even though that their only reason that they were close last year is now on our team, playing a different position.
I thought that was great. And the same thing happens. I've already looked at X this week, uh-huh, the beginning of this week, and the number of USF fans that are running their mouth thinking that they're going to come in and get this upset. It's kind of similar to what
Western Kentucky was doing. You're starting Tyler Buckner this week, are you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We don't have a bona fide lacrosse player at quarterback, and it's not going to be pouring down rain again, hopefully. And yeah, that was with a very, very poor team. We didn't really have an offensive line. And I'm sorry, we were playing at South Florida last season, and we were in Tuscaloosa. It is going to be different. Yeah. I just wasn't really aware that South Florida had fans.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that those liberals out in California were fans of football either.
Oh my gosh.
Let's move on to some other games that happened this weekend, guys. You had LSU and USC play each other, and USC come out victorious there. Brian Kelly had a breakdown in the press conference. That was something, wasn't it? Slamming the table. Good acting job. Might get him a job in Hollywood with that. You had Colorado barely beat North Dakota State. North Dakota State had a Hail Mary attempt, just fell short. Miami dominate Florida. Virginia Tech, as alluded to, when we started, losing to Vanderbilt. That was a surprise, but great news all about Diego Pavia from last year in New Mexico State. He put on a clinic for them.
He's the best quarterback I've ever seen in person.
The slugfest between Notre Dame and Texas A&M. That was, if you like offense, would not have recommended watching that game because the quarterbacks could not throw the football whatsoever.
Just not watch that game.
It was rough. So, guys, what was the best game of the weekend for you to tune into?
Oof, man, that's hard.
I would say the best overall game was that LSU USC game. If you like hard nosed, you know, close game football, I think that was fun. It was a fun game to watch. It was a close finish. It was two very good football teams. LSU will be a very good football team this year, and so will USC. I love seeing the improvement of both of those defenses. Those are two of the worst defenses in college football last year, if not the worst defenses in college football. Yet, you know, for most of that game, that was kind of a defensive slugfest. It was enjoyable to watch those two, how much they've gotten better, even though they lost the number one and number two picked at the NFL draft at both quarterback slots. That game was exciting. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, for me, I think it was Virginia Tech and Vanderbilt. I know my pick lost, but for Vanderbilt to come out and run the ball like they did, I thought Cedric Alexander had a great game. I thought that Vanderbilt offensive line really set the tone early on, which allowed them to get the lead. And then for Virginia Tech really not to go away, and they got punched in the mouth, and they kind of ended up responding in the second half and forcing an overtime game when really they had no business being there. I thought Kyron Drones he started off slow. That was the big thing, but really got going, ended up being 22 of 33, 322 passing yards and two passing touchdowns. He did have an interception. I wasn't too fond of that, but I thought I saw a lot of good things from him in this Virginia Tech team. But here's the thing, when you start off slow, you can't really expect to just come out and win the game. Vanderbilt was ready to go from the start, and they completed what they set out to do. Even though they really went into an unnecessary overtime period, which, you know, they missed a field goal at the end. I think that's one thing that they'll probably end up working on this week, a lot more kicks. And I mean, Vanderbilt, who could have thought that they'd open up the season 1-0? I don't think a lot of people had that on their list. And then you really look at this Vanderbilt roster and you look at their schedule and you're like, can Vanderbilt secretly be a dark horse team? I know we talk a lot of trash on Vanderbilt every single season in the offseason, saying that they're bad, they're terrible, they're the joke of the SEC. But now it's just like they actually have a pretty talented roster, and they could be a threat to upset some of these middle of the pack teams in the SEC. So I don't know. It's really about what Diego Pavia was able to do. And I think that's the biggest thing, him being the type of leader that they need to come in and really just command this team and command this offense, because Vanderbilt really hasn't had that kind of identity on the offensive end for a while now. And now they do. And that's very surprising for me to see.
For me, it would be Miami and Florida. I know it wasn't a close game or anything, but Miami did beat Florida 41-17. Smash. But the command of the offense that Cam Ward had was something Mario Cristobal has been wanting his entire career at Miami. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke was a terrible quarterback for him, and that really got Mario Cristobal a bad rap, was the quarterback play. But you see Cam Ward plays for his defense. Amazing. There was throws he was making that were very Patrick Mahomes-esque. There's a lot of comparisons to him throughout the coverage of that game. He was playing lights out. He got a lot of help from the defense. Tyler Barron, the Tennessee transfer, played his tail off. There was a lot of times where we were calling his name. I think his name was called the most defensively. I mean, he was all over the place. Reminds me a lot of Quay Russo, the way he was all on the field. So that's something to look forward to for Miami. You got a good defense now. Your offense, your quarterback was humming the entire game. But for Florida, that was awful. I mean, the right tackle for Florida might have had something on the game because he just did not block for Graham Mertz at all. At all. Terrible. And Graham Mertz left the game with a concussion. There's not any hope that he would play next week. Looks like DJ Lagway will get that start. The lack of creativity offensively was terrible. The defense, once again, Florida was still nothing to be happy about. Ron Roberts comes in from Auburn, and it looks the same from what it was last year from Florida. Lapses in the secondary multiple times. So Florida, and I was kind of expecting this team to be a little bit better than what people were saying, and they heavily disappointed me. But watching Miami this game, it was the best game offensively for me from the weekend in a game against the Florida team that people were expecting to be somewhat decent. So I think this makes it the best game of the weekend, just watching Miami appear and actually be somewhat back from what people have been expecting the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, Graham Mertz is not getting that starting job back. I'm going to go ahead and tell you all that.
No, Lagway is going to take that over. I just want to call this out. The Locked On Gators host a couple of weeks ago on the Locked On SEC preview. They did that. They brought all the hosts on for all 16 of the SEC teams and sat them down and in different increments and had the contenders in the middle of the pack and then had the bottom tier SEC teams. And of course they had Auburn in the bottom tier with Florida, along with Florida. And you know, the host said, asked Zach Blackerby, who is the Locked On Auburn host. He asked him specifically, what team out of this group do you think could surprise some people? And Zach's answer was the Auburn Tigers. He predicted Auburn to go 8-4. And that Florida Locked On Gators host just rolled his eyes and laughed at him. And this is, look who's getting the last laugh now. All those Florida recruits that chose Florida over Auburn this past year. See y'all in the transfer portal this next year. Y'all, bye-bye, Billy Napier. Y'all are terrible. Y'all be lucky to win two games with y'all's schedule.
That's a bold prediction there, Gray. Two games. I think if Billy Napier is 1-some at any point in the season, like 1-5, he'll be gone.
Oh, yeah. There's season no fired on the tarmac.
That would be what would happen, I would assume. It's crazy that they got rid of Dan Mullen, considering he made 3 New York Six Bowls. Mm-hmm. He had one bad year, and they just kicked him to the curb. And you're going to have that with most coaches. Nick Saban was an outlier there, never really had a bad season after that first year. So what was the worst game of the weekend? We talked about the best. What was the worst?
Oh, God.
I know my answer is it's pretty simple.
Yeah, I have mine too. I'll let Greg go first though.
No, go ahead then.
I think for me, I think it was definitely Oregon versus Idaho. I know they ended up getting the win. But when you come out and you face an FCS opponent, I know Idaho is one of the better FCS teams. But the amount of flatness Oregon came out with, Dylan Gabriel, while he had a good game stat-wise, they struggled to capitalize when they did get into the red zone. And I think that's a big part of it. Oregon's defense, I mean, they hung around for as long as they could. But when if you would have told me when we were previewing games the week before, if the Idaho would have been in the game with less than 5 minutes to go, only down by 3, I told you you were absolutely nuts. Oregon's supposed to be one of the best teams in the country. Many people have picked them to win the national championship, and they come out in week one, and I know they escape, but there's not a lot of confidence behind that pick now. Dylan Gabriel is supposed to be one of the better quarterbacks. People think he should win the Heisman. I didn't see a lot that said he's going to be comfortable playing inside that offense. I mean, we have a few games before they get into the Big Ten schedule, but it's not going to be easy. It's not just a gimme type of thing. They're not just going to be able to sleepwalk into the playoffs like they were able to do in the Pac-12. I know last year was kind of the outlier, but previous years were like that. This is a competitive Big Ten schedule, and there are a lot of hungry teams out there that want to make it. I mean, we talk about Penn State. I know Michigan didn't look good at all. I think that might be Alex's pick for worst game. But there are other teams out there that are hungry to make the playoff out of the Big Ten. I mean, USC picked up a big win last night. And what's to say that they aren't able to have a great season and go on and make the playoff as a dark horse team now. So there are other teams out there who will be willing to hustle and fight for that playoff spot. And if Oregon doesn't want to do it, then that's fine. Then just go ahead and have a disappointing season and waste the amount of talent that they have on their team. But I mean, that is a pitiful performance against Idaho team. I mean, no one could have expected that.
Yeah. I really hope I didn't steal Alex's here because I know he's excited about his answer, but I've got to go to Columbia, South Carolina and say South Carolina.
Oh my goodness. Lord have mercy.
Just absolutely horrific.
Shane Beamer.
Oh my gosh. That's horrible. And this is a South Carolina team that, you know, a lot of people, you know, they're not top echelon of the SEC and they never will be because they're South Carolina, but they improved very much from last year. I know they lost Spencer Rattler, but bringing in Rocket Sanders from Arkansas and having a guy like that, you know, what they did on their offensive line, this should be a decent South Carolina team. This isn't a team that should struggle against Old Dominion. And that was just a horrible game to watch. It was just, it was miserable. Look, South Carolina, a lot like Florida and Billy Napier. If South Carolina doesn't have, you know, convincing wins, you know, by week five, week six, depending on their schedule, Shane Beamer is going to be on the hottest of hot seats possible because it is time for you to have that South Carolina team to be competing. And he just doesn't.
Yeah, my worst game of the weekend is Notre Dame and Texas A&M. I know it was close towards the end, but I like watching decent offenses, and neither of those team had a decent offense.
Not at all.
It was awful. It was like watching something back in the 1930s. QB runs, running the football. I know running the football is great and all, but the creativity when it came to passing was awful. Connor Wiegman, Lord have mercy. I know he dealt with an injury last season and he hasn't got a lot of experience, but looked flat. Riley Leonard has all the experience in the world. Disappointing. Deuce Knight, Gray, I don't think Deuce Knight wants to go play in that Notre Dame offense anymore. Now, the defense for both these teams was really, really good. Notre Dame's defense was as advertised. The corners and safeties were really good. Benjamin Morrison and Xavier Watts were all over the place. And then you look at A&M, their pass rush, their run defense was really good. Nick Scorton, a couple other guys were really good. But like I said, I'm a fan of offenses. The offenses in this game were atrocious. For me, it was the worst game of the weekend that neither of y'all mentioned.
I do want to bring up a little bit of a off subject point here before we kind of wrap this up. At the time of this recording, right before halftime, too. Boston College is currently beating Florida State 14-3.
The Fighting Bill O'Briens.
Tallahassee. And DJ Uiagalelei is 3 of 11 for 30 yards.
Really inspiring stuff.
So before we get out of here, guys, what teams impressed you and disappointed you this week?
Man, I kind of got to steal. I know I'll stay away, but I'll stay in the Big Ten. I was not impressed with Michigan. This is a team that I know they lost Jim Harbaugh. I know they lost their quarterback. I know they lost their star running back. This is a team that is defending a national championship. They should not be struggling with Fresno State. This isn't 2006. You should not be struggling with Fresno State. That's ridiculous. I was not impressed by Michigan at all. And the team that I was absolutely most impressed with, no question, was the Miami Hurricanes, for sure. Just like Alex said, when he was talking about that game, it was the type of quarterback that Cam Ward is what Miami and Mario Cristobal have been missing. And he is that hole that he has filled that hole. And If I'm a Miami fan, I'm extremely excited about this year. I know you paid like $8 million for Cam Ward. By the end of this year, we could be completely saying he's worth it. Right now, they're definitely my favorite to win the ACC.
I would
Nathan, what about you?
I think I will go ahead and say that Penn State really impressed me this week. Coming into it, I had picked West Virginia to upset them. I really thought it was a trap game. Penn State, the past few years, James Franklin has not been one to really win big games, or he has fallen into traps several different times. And I feel like Penn State was very vulnerable in this opener, especially playing at West Virginia. And they basically shut all those arguments down. I think it was close early, but they really got up to a start in the second half and just ran off with it. I saw a lot of great things from the offense. I think there's a lot of improvement from last year. And of course, I think we already knew what they had on the defensive end. I didn't expect Penn State to come out like they did. And I know it's a long season, and we could be talking about Penn State doing the same things that they've done in the past here in a few weeks. But as of right now, they impressed me, and if they keep playing like that, I think that they can definitely make the playoff.
Disappointing, Nathan?
Disappointing. Man, I can get down the list for disappointing. LSU. I will say LSU was very disappointing to me. We talk about how much talent was on that roster. I know they lost a lot. You lose a Heisman winner, quarterback. I mean, I wasn't really a true believer in that team, but I did expect them to at least beat USC, who had lost a generational quarterback and a lot of great receivers and a lot of people on the offensive end who had given them some great production. But instead, Brian Kelly comes out and he just basically does not decide to do anything coaching wise. He looked like Dennis Allen, basically. I mean, Garrett Nussmeier, I thought he had a pretty decent game other than the interception he threw at the end. I felt like he did what he was supposed to do. I felt the LSU offense, for the most part, did what they were supposed to do. It is the lack of defense that has haunted LSU for the past 2 years now. And they come into this game and they disappoint once again, giving up huge chunk plays in crunch time, which allow USC to move the ball and score at will, basically. I know the score doesn't really indicate that because USC had problems on the offensive end of their own and on the defensive end. And that's another thing to talk about if you want to talk about USC's upcoming schedule. But for LSU, they haven't won a home opener since 2019.
And they're not going to win next year at Clemson.
You don't think so?
Nope.
I don't know.
Even
Clemson wasn't inspiring either. I'm sure that might be Alex's pick now.
That was going to be my pick, was that Clemson.
Yeah, well, I was back and forth, but I figured that's who you wanted. But yeah, LSU, not very inspiring. Brian Kelly, you're supposed to have this team being a contender at this point. I feel like we're just broken records. All these people who should have their teams being contenders at this point have just done absolutely nothing to get them there. And there's just no change at all. So at what point are LSU fans going to figure out Brian Kelly is nothing special? And that he's just going to continue to be mediocre and they're not going to win a national championship. They're not going to do these great things. I mean, I guarantee, they had a Heisman winner. I guess that's good enough for him.
I think with LSU, you can hire majority of these top level coaches or even somewhat lower level coaches and they come in and recruit. It's LSU. You have the pedigree, but you have to be able to develop the talent and coach it on the field. And that's something Brian Kelly has struggled with, is developing it and coaching it on the field. And if he can't figure that out, I would expect him to be on the hot seat. Maybe not this season, but if next season it's another issue with him not developing key talent, we might be talking about Brian Kelly on the hot seat. Because LSU does not handle mediocrity well. They're like Alabama fans. If Alabama goes 8-4 this season, Kalen DeBoer will be on the hot seat, regardless of what he does in the recruiting.
Kalen DeBoer will be burned at the stake if y'all go 8-4.
So for me, the most disappointing team was Clemson. Going into halftime, I was like, this is going to be a defensive battle. It was going to be like a Notre Dame, Texas A&M game. But then Georgia comes out, figures out offense, and they just thrash Clemson. Clemson is in the last 15 games against Power 4 teams, they are 8-7. Power 5 teams, so I guess because you want to include back 12. So Dabo's inability and unwanting to use the portal has come back to bite him the past two or three seasons. And if he doesn't get with the times here, old man, he will be out the door. And I'm sitting here twice talking about two coaches going out the door that people were saying are some of the best in the country. But Brian Kelly can't develop the talent. Dabo can't get the talent out of the portal, at least. He can get good recruits, but he can't get it out of the portal.
But he's not even recruiting well anymore. It's not recruiting like he's got, you know, he used to have the number one, number two, number three classes back in 2016, 17, 18 when they were winning national championships. But he's not even in the top 15.
Yeah, that's true.
The most impressive team to me outside of Miami, which I talked about earlier, would have to be Oklahoma State. We all knew what Ollie Gordon was going to be at the running back position. But the one thing I was worried about was the quarterback. That was their big issue last season and the season before that, rotating between all these quarterbacks. We saw the viral meme of Gunnar Gundy coming in and his hand shaking. And Alan Bowman comes in this game. Granted, it's against South Dakota State. They're one of the better FCS schools. But he looked very impressive, completing majority of his passes. I believe he had over 60% completion percentage and just had the command of that offense. And if he can play like that this season and they can have Ollie Gordon even barely replicate what he did last season, let's say a three-fourths of that production, this team can be very scary in a Big 12 that is very, very wide open. I mean, there is tons of teams, Utah, Arizona, Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State. We know Oklahoma State's defense is always going to be one of the better in the Big 12. So Oklahoma State really did impress me with their quarterback play from Alan Bowman, who I think is in his seventh year of eligibility. So you would expect him to figure it out playing against 17, 18, 19-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they'll have a little bit of a battle next week. They go, they have Arkansas at home, which I know, Greg, you said Arkansas didn't really impress you. I was actually impressed with Taylen Green and what he was able to come in and do. I thought he made some really good decisions. He had a lot of great plays that he made. And maybe Arkansas isn't a super great team, but I feel like they can pull off some upsets. And if I'm choosing an upset to pull off, next week might be a prime time to do it if Arkansas wants to get one on the board. Oklahoma State, like you said, Alex, I think that Oklahoma State on the offensive end is pretty set.
Yeah.
It's their defense has always been the question to me. And if their defense will struggle next week against Arkansas, then I think they'll have a long season.
Well, it's kind of like Auburn where you're all rising on the quarterback play a little bit. If Alan Bowman can command the offense, then Oklahoma State will be in good looking. But if Al Bowman goes back to what he was a couple years ago or even last year, it's going to be terrible because he can't just hand the ball off to Ollie Gordon 30, 40 times a game and not expect him to stack the box. So it really does rely on the quarterback at Oklahoma State. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.